Good afternoon. It is Use Your Words Authors Speak, and thank you for listening. We are part of KURU 89.1 FM, and we so appreciate this radio station for allowing poetry and wonderful people to come on the airwaves. Today, we have a special guest. It's Stuart Warren, a resident of Silver City. Before he came here, he traveled around. On one of the back of his books, it says, A Life of Troublemaking, Exploration, and Ceremony. He caught rides at truck stops, small plane terminals, and along farm-to-market roads while working his way through a variety of cultures and landscapes from Haight-Ashbury to Cuernavaca. In more recent decades, he's settled into a pattern of small migrations through southern Colorado and northern New Mexico, finding his way in the last few years to Silver City. Stuart is also the owner of Mercury Heartlink, an independent press for discriminating writers, where he serves as curator and writing coach, assisting other artists in realizing their inner visions. Welcome, Stuart.
Oh, thanks, Elise.
So when I was thinking about this, about how you have traveled down through northern New Mexico, which is evidenced in a book you wrote called Here There Is Also Burning, I was wondering how living in the southwest corner has influenced your poetry, or how has that changed what you've written, or has it?
Oh, that's an excellent question. It has changed. The landscape has always informed, I mean, my personal journey and therefore my work, as we call it, and the expanse of space, the horizons, allow for an expansion of the mind. It's interesting to consider for those of you that read either prose or poetry, the difference between Eastern writers and Western writers. And I don't want to be too sharp here in my distinctions, but Eastern writers oftentimes will have a different kind of a landscape just in the way they describe their experience. And oftentimes it's more communal and involves more people. Right?
That makes sense.
Well, there you go. And Western writers have that sense of horizon and where are we going next and some kind of movement, whether it's west and the idea of frontier and moving out, you know, beyond frontier, always pushing frontier. And it's a very different style and something to notice.
Mm-hmm. And I think in your poetry, it also speaks of your interior landscape and how you're kind of pushing that to perhaps, that's the way I feel about it here, the sun here, the way that there's so little water, but we appreciate every drop, makes us look a little deeper than perhaps if we lived in other parts of the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, makes us work a little harder for everything, I think. I was wondering how did you come to publish your first book?
Oh, my. My friend Arthur Washburn in Del Norte, Colorado, actually encouraged me. I had already published, you know, several chat books and so forth, but he, let's see, as I remember it, he and I got together with another person in our community and did an anthology of poetry. Mm-hmm. And so I learned how to use print-on-demand services, which worked out perfectly for me. I'd already, you know, jumped on the internet in the late 80s, early 90s. And so the idea of presenting people, whether digitally or in print, was already a part of me. And working with artists was also already a part of what I was about, if you will, coaching and helping people to realize their own voice, their own artistic expression, their contribution, if you will, and to make that not only okay for them, but to encourage them in doing so. So publishing was a natural, but that occurred, early part of this century. Gosh, that sounds lofty.
So when you published your first book, you hadn't started your publishing, your press, or did you start them both at the same time?
I think they started around the same time.
Ah.
I'm actually getting ready to do a third book for Mary Elizabeth Van Pelt, and she was, I think, the first author that I published.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I know Stuart as a publisher, too, and He is a wonderful publisher. So we have that connection. So when you started publishing, did that change the way you spoke or the way you looked at poetry? Or did it change things for you, or was it just another extension? An extension. All right. And when you were younger, I don't know this about you, what was an early experience that you had where you first learned that language had power?
Oh, wow. That's fabulous. I think others saw that and heard that long before I did. And looking back on that, that's true. But then somewhere in my 20s, perhaps, I started noticing that when I spoke, people listened. Maybe not for long, after they realized how wacky it might be, or, you know, confronting, or who knows. But there was something about the power of voice that was already there, whether it's resonance, vibration, whether, you know, where it comes from within the self. I don't know, and I'm not going to try and, you know, answer that. Mm-hmm. But I recognized early on that I had the gift of gab, and that it was both a responsibility and a gift.
Right.
And that's important to know. I think all of our gifts are like that, depending upon how we use them.
I think so, too.
You know, the power of the written and the spoken word can just take people to their knees, can really hurt people unnecessarily. There's moments to be an activist and to, you know, point out, hey, you know, what's that in the middle of the living room floor? But there's a way to say that that can invite people to look deeper into themselves without shaming.
That's really great. It took me a lot longer to find my voice than that. So that's really interesting that you knew that young. That's really great. Stuart, would you read one of your poems? There's nothing like just reading to say who you are.
I'd be glad to. And you had looked at this most recent book of mine, All Sacred Where We Stand. And suggested a few, so I'm following your lead on that, so
thank
here
you.
We go. This is early on in the collection. It's called Return to the Porch. They say rain on Wednesday, so this must be some other day. Dancing ribbons of sandalwood say it all. West African kora players wander through. A soft mind unfolds. We drove the north road, not a cloud, nowhere to catch. Other stunned orphans arise in this same season. Are we not closest kin? Fingers on a fortunate hand. Rice and wheat wave in the field according to grace. We wave in the shared sky, drink from pure earth. Hard at it, the bee and the plow, yet some bodies are starving. Some souls, too. Returning south past Saddle Rock, those pale blue hills, intimation of verticality. But most questions go sideways, though occasionally a thought lifts, looks over the knoll. My heart is steady with and without. After a while, some desire will cause me to rise.
Thank you, Stuart. That's great. Great, great, great. I see in this last book, All Sacred Where We Stand, that you've published, there's a lot of Silver City in it. And so that makes a really special book for us.
I love writing about community, and I can't say enough, really. About what I experience here. I'm sorry, I interrupted you, though. Please continue.
No, you go right ahead.
Really?
Yes, yes.
You know, this community is phenomenal, and the listeners know that. There is a lot of energy here, a lot of movement toward what is good, and we recognize that here. People know this is good. And we wave to each other. We take time to investigate, to inquire, but also to simply say hello and enjoy life, to let joy lead us at times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's wonderful in that way. Anyway.
Are you going to read another one? It looks
which
like
one?
You may.
Is that the,
I do not know.
Mesmerized? Is that a
sure.
kind of local thing? or perhaps not, mesmerized. Before the soft, dark rain arrived, the song of summer cicadas receded one tree at a time into the padded silence. A robin, just as quiet, made good work of the newly wetted ground. Everything that dropped or hung fell straight in the stillness. In a magnified distance, the slap of wet lumber being unloaded by two men from a trailer, water dripping off the brim of the hatted one, off the nose and glasses of the other. After that, everyone gone inside. The pitter-patter quickened its pace. The streets began to run. As for the rest of the afternoon, the last thing I remember was stringy silver droplets slipping hypnotically from a rusted tin roof.
That's a great one. Great one, great one. We will continue to hope that we will see some more of that wonderful rain coming from our skies soon. I wanted to say, too, that Stuart's books are available at the Tranquil Buzz Cafe and also on Amazon.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you're looking for them, because really you will find our town in here in the very best way that I have seen it portrayed. So it's really wonderful to read about your own place that you live and discover it in kind of a new way through someone else's eyes. We are going to take a tiny break right now, and we shall be back in just a moment. Please stay with us. This is Use Your Words, Author Speak. Thank you for rejoining us at Use Your Words, Author Speak. We have Stuart Warren with us today, who is a local poet. But really, he's from all over. And when we were talking, I brought in this little piece of a quote before I came by Maya Angelou, who just kind of reminds me of something about who Stuart is and, of course, maybe who all of us are. Here's the quote. You are free when you realize you belong no place. You belong every place, no place at all. And the price is high. The reward is great. Maya Angelou.
You know, poet Jack Mueller, who passed away just a year ago, or within this last year or so, at one of the poetry conferences up in Colorado that I used to attend fairly regularly, paid me a great compliment. And he was an old beat poet from North Beach. And he said, "Stuart, you're a drifter." And he nailed me in a wonderful way. It wasn't derogatory at all, but that business of always challenging identity, that identity, while it's necessary as we, you know, build our ego and develop who we are, you know, earlier in our age and explore our individuality, our particularity, is also a part of the trap. If you will, a part of the bondage.
Right, because when we start wanting to get out of that box, then can we? Do people want to keep us there who've seen us there before? Do we need to move to another geographic place? Of course, then we're still with ourselves. How do we reinvent ourselves?
Exactly.
It's really a good question.
And the mind wants to do that. It wants to keep reinforcing, you know, I am this, I am that, so forth and so on. And so the challenge is to pause, to settle, and
The challenge is to pause and settle. That's a good secret to share.
Here's a poem that may speak a little to that. Soft Return. A single cloud in the west, backlit by a leaving sun, drifts. A friend drops by on her way to Zikr. I feel I haven't said enough about beauty and longing, about the Holy Spirit entering in. One body, one breath, I am hungry here. A soft, nameless wave brings every moment, face and curve, running silently up on the shore of my heart. I am beached, porous, boundless juice flowing into dusk. Across the waters, someone receives a sunrise, pushes their fishing skiff into the red gold streams of memory. In this way, we are named and touched.
Wow, that's really a favorite poem. That is really, really beautiful. I want to talk a little bit more about how we become who we are, or how we change who we are. After I wrote my last book about my childhood, it really changed me in a way that I couldn't have foreseen by laying that story out. It freed me in a certain way, which I thought it would do, but I'm kind of at this transition point of, well, now who am I without all of that?
Indeed. It's so important for us to tell our story or tell our stories. And then once we do and have that recognition and own that somehow with all the feelings that come with it, I think that it's just important to let go of the story.
Yeah, and we can go easily or in a difficult way.
And isn't it wonderful that natural law will give us the biofeedback on that?
Yeah, right.
One thing that occurs to me more and more and more, it's like, what am I doing here? This writing, this life, this all these different things that I'm involved in, and it's all one thing. What I'm doing is responding to and following my own awakening. It is just that.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend who regularly asks himself, who am I? What am I doing here? What is my purpose? Like on a very regular basis, not just like the big question every 5 years, but like maybe a few times a day. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting to be so current with who you are in this moment. And then give yourself that freedom.
What if our journey to the self does not require all this working on the self?
Yeah, just allowing. Very interesting. I wondered if there was a definitive moment in your life when you just knew that you would write.
No. In a word.
All right, then. Did it just kind of grow naturally? It just kind of unfolded?
Yeah, like so much else.
Yeah.
It evolved. And then one day, one kind of realizes, oh, this is what's important. This is what I'm doing. To use, not necessarily Christian, but perhaps a religious term, we discover this is my ministry, to simply be myself first, and then to express that. And for me, it is through language, which is how I came up with the name for my company, Mercury Heart Link.
Tell us a little bit about your company, because it's not just a regular thing. It's quite
unique.
It's
not a regular thing. I'd love to tell you how much she's grinning right now. So, it's about collaborating. It's about joining authors in their process of becoming. There is no other process except becoming.
Right.
And, but we already discovered that, or said that, rather.
But tell them what you do. I mean, he makes covers.
Oh, well, I do all the layout and design.
Artistically, and
all of that.
It's nothing small.
It's art. It's beautiful. I get very involved. Yeah, designing the layout and the style and so forth and the covers, and it goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. So I get to do my art, too.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. And it's not the usual run-of-the-mill publishing company. So that's nice that we have that. How many books have you written, Stuart?
I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
I think we're up to like 28, 26, 28.
Including the Tarot, books. There was four or five of those, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have a favorite amongst those?
Oh, no, and I try to. I feel like I should, and I don't.
But maybe that would be like having your favorite child or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Right,
so
exactly.
Maybe you know you love them all.
Yeah, they're all, yeah.
So that works.
That's it.
I wondered if you had any favorite authors that particularly inspire you.
Oh, I'm inspired by so many. Mm-hmm. I could go on and on and on. You know, recently I'm reading some Paul Coelho, and... Okay, so I'm finding a lot there. Richard Rohr, the kind of renegade priest who's really kind of the new Thomas Merton. He's definitely a favorite of mine. And also Ta Malachi. So those are just some names that quickly come to mind.
But that's nice to know. You know, it's nice to know who inspires you and who brings you to a new place, perhaps, or you recognize already as someone who speaks the same language, because sometimes it's one or all of those.
Well, in my understanding, at best, when I have written something, spoken something that resonates with someone else, then I'm not telling them anything they didn't already know, but through the symbolism, helping them to arrive at a place where they go, oh, I know that.
Right. And that was kind of one of my questions, like, how do you bring the reader along to a new place, but also take care of the reader?
Oh, boy, that is an art. You know, I can speak, I'll just say a few words about that, since we don't have 2 hours. But that'd be a lot of self-importance, wouldn't it? So I vacillate, might be a word, or oscillate back and forth between the rational and the intuitive. And it's very important. And I do that consciously. Mm-hmm. Actually, I do it unconsciously at this point. It's kind of like I get in and drive the car. I'm not thinking, depress the clutch, turn on the turn signal. Yeah, you just do it now. It's become a working part of the mind. But this business of moving back and forth between the rational and the intuitive is very important, because this is what both unhinges the mind, but also, which is important, you know, this deconstruction in alchemy. So that we can get down to some deeper places within ourselves. But also it allows one to integrate and synthesize both of those functions, if you will, or aspects of mind. And so I use a lot of symbolism. And these symbols are, let me just say this, I'm just going to throw this one out there, all the world as icon. Right? We are an icon of the divine, right? I mean, let's just get cosmic here. So this is the kind of stuff I'm working with. So in the poetry, it's to set up a symbol and then, you know, approach something from the rational for a moment. And then the next couple of lines, you know, set up a symbol I have no control over, nor do I want to have control over, or even much of an expectation about what the reader's going to do with that. What the reader does with my work is none of my business.
That's the great thing, isn't it? Yeah. You're just responsible to put it out there.
Yeah.
And then the reader can come along. Well, I wondered what new poems you might be working on, because I know you're always working.
I am, indeed. I've got a couple here.
Okay. That would be great.
I've got one called La Entrega, brand new for Wendy Biondo. And entrega in this sense, la entrega is it's a surrender, but it's an agreed surrender, if you will. It's almost something sacred in the way that I think of it. So there's some Spanish in here. And anyway, la entrega.
We love it.
Shadowed steps lead up the mountain. Rose water and ice, hardship and honey, gracia y dolores. I want you to know how much I love you, what you mean to the world, and why you cannot fail. Es imposible, mi amiga. Pasteboard, dry rot, plástico, miles and miles of that stuff. I follow my awakening first, environment from the inside out. Wild pig and soft deer walk beside me. Soul of these lonesome cerritos, soul of my sweet little village, alma de este mundo misterioso, you are named by the perpetual embrace. A single violet globe shatters to become 10 orange ones. There was a wound to the head, the price of free fall, but nothing here to figure out. She agrees to the grief, turns, and begins her ascent.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you.
Want to get another one in?
Do I ever. Yes,
here we go.
Please.
This is one of those poems occasionally where the title is the first word of the first verse. Returned to the Chihuahuan desert, the mind settles. Settles around the shapes of pear cactus, their bell choirs of dark red fruit sounding, saguaros, palmettos, ocotillo, wisps of sturdy grass. The sacred geometry within you blooms on this desert as patterns unfold before the 14 senses. How else could those chatty birds find their way from willow grove to cliff, from here to home? How else could you hear the shapes dancing and your own heart singing alleluias?
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. Gosh, Stuart, it's wonderful to have you here. We are kind of at the end of our show, but there's a tiny thing that needs to be said. Yes.
I do. I want to put in a plug for the bell choir, the community bell choir that is forming. We're meeting over at the Episcopal Church Tuesdays, 6:30. And if you are a bell ringer or would like to be a bell ringer, come and join us. You can find more information on the website for the Church of the Good Shepherd.
Great. And I should say, too, that it will be a Black History celebration at the Tranquil Buzz on February 17th, 2 to 4, with music and poetry. Please come by. It will be wonderful to have you. Thank you so much for listening to our show. We appreciate your support. This is KORU.